It's time for Lickin' on Lending.
Welcome, everybody. Good to have you with us.
Welcome to Lickin' on Lending, a weekly mortgage market update providing up-to-the-minute information on interest rates, loan programs, and hot industry news, all related to the mortgage industry. Brought to you by Transformational Mortgage Solutions. To participate in today's program, our guest call-in line is 646-716-4972. Now here's your host of Lickin' on Lending, David Lickin.
Let's begin.
Without further ado, let's get into the hot topic for this week. Folks, I'm excited to have Rajesh Bhatt here with us. He's the co-founder and CEO of Roostify, a name we all know and have seen all over the industry. And we're really wanting to talk about what is going on in the industry. I love talking to innovative people, and Rajesh is definitely one of those. Anyway, Rajesh, good to have you here, friend.
Great to be here.
And it's always a pleasure to talk to someone who is committed to innovation, reinventing our industry. We badly need it. I've been in this industry for 47 years. We've been begging for that. Joining me on the interview is my good friend, Alan Pollack. Alan, good to have you here.
Great to be here.
Anytime we talk innovation, Alan Pollack's got to be in the conversation. He is one of the more innovative people. So, Rajesh, I want to talk about this. You have really built a pretty significant team. And how do you, in these kind of times, keep a team motivated, always interested in leadership? Let's start there.
It's definitely been a crazy time over the past few months. And the pandemic came on. We recognized that things were changing and we were going to need to just change the way we worked as a team. And so one of the things we did is just really stay true to our values. And those are inspiring trust and putting people first and acting decisively, dreaming big and owning it. And everything we did, we put through that lens. We certainly wanted to put people first as we saw what was happening just in the overall economy. And we stepped up the communication. So we previously had done a monthly all-hands meeting, and so we stepped that up to a weekly cadence. As we all moved into our homes and sheltered in place, I set up twice a week CEO drop-ins where anyone could just drop in with me. It's a great point, though. With our customers, though, we definitely stepped up the communication as well. I personally reached out to the executives that I typically interface with on our customers and just made sure, one, that we understood what they were going through, what they were prioritizing, and making sure that we could be the best partner as possible in that context. And two, just also let them know that we were there for them as well. Because I think 2020 for us, as I told our team, is the year of the customer. Our first and primary focus is on making sure that our customers are successful and sustaining through a really crazy time, particularly in our industry. And so our job became very simplified. We just moved into a concerted pandemic disruption operation, which is just making sure that our customers are successful, taking care of our people, and being as transparent as possible and thinking about how we're navigating through the pandemic.
Well, Alan Pollack, who's on the phone with me, I'm going to get him in the conversation. Alan, we've talked about how do you communicate. I'd love to hear about your thoughts and some of the technology and any questions you have for Rajesh.
Yeah, Rajesh, first, great to have you on the program and good to talk to you as well. We're innovators, right? You've innovated an amazing technology platform and you've got a great following and you're doing really well. What do you think this pandemic and the state of our industry and how your customers are responding help you pave the way for more innovation moving forward?
What's happened with the pandemic is it's accelerated a lot of initiatives that would otherwise have been more experimental, particularly around e-closing and notarization, that are a lot more complex to adopt. We provide a capability that allows the consumer to perform application intake and document intake with the bank and to bring in third parties as well to collaborate through the closing to perform fulfillment activities and for the bank to perform decisioning activities. But as we have worked with our customers around e-closing and notarization, there's always been intrigue in these capabilities and proofs of concept. But very quickly, for many of our customers, including large banks, this became a business imperative for them to figure out how to deploy these capabilities at scale. I think the longer we've been sheltering in place, the more clear it has been that this is going to be something that we're going to figure out how to scale very quickly and to deploy nationwide. And the collective will is now there and the necessity is there. These digital capabilities that had previously been more of a channel type of operation are now becoming a business continuity imperative for the industry. So what that's meant for us is we've seen a huge spike in volume, obviously due to the rates, but also due to more capabilities moving into our solution from our platform, from other systems. and then more users coming in. Our customers have moved people out of the call centers and out of the branches into their home settings and found the need to have to engage digitally in order to get business done. The interesting thing has been the productivity has either stayed on par or actually increased for many of our customers, which tells us all that the way people go back to work after the dust settles on all this is going to be very different than the work setting that they left when we entered into the pandemic.
Oh, absolutely. One thing you said that I think is really important is the pace of change and accelerated initiatives. The pace of change is driven by the industry, and it's also driven by our clients, right? We don't want to build stuff that they can't adopt or that's not ready for the market. And looking at a lot of the stuff that you guys have done, you have one relationship that I've talked about on the Lickin' on Lending podcast quite a bit, which is your TD Bank relationship. And I think that's really important. It adds a different flavor to everything you're doing for the independent market, for independent mortgage bankers, as well as other banks and credit unions. And I also come from a background of online banking and mortgage origination. And so I think the experience and the pace of change, some of the things that you're seeing from a consumer's point of view through online banking and the way that TD Bank is asking you to customize your application and build innovation really gives you a very interesting intersection for digital breakthrough to the rest of the market. On that same topic of digital breakthrough, I thought I'd maybe ask you about that.
TD is awesome. They're obviously very focused on very sophisticated digital capabilities for the customers. Their motto is unexpectedly human, which is really challenging the norms of the banking experience. I think the way we partner with them, similar to many of other customers, is to really align roadmaps. We have a roadmap that's born out of our own vision and our understanding of what our North Star, if you want, of enabling a consumer to manage the entire lending experience in a single place and to be able to have maximum transparency and predictability in that experience and allowing our customers to benefit from that at the same time. But you made a great point that if you build something for the industry and no one adopts it, then it's all for naught. And we've learned that the hard way in our early days as well. And so pacing with your customers is super important. What gets really exciting is where you show an ability to deliver and then you show an ability to scale. And scale is super important in this space because it's one thing to support 20 to 50% of the volume of a bank, but it's a completely different order of complexity and responsibility to be able to support 80 to 100% of the bank's volume. And so that's what we do with our customers. And so once you have demonstrated that scale, then the challenge is innovating at scale. And that really is a joint challenge between the bank and us. And so with TD, it means a lot of interaction, not just with the working teams, but also at the executive level so that we are really aligning strategically on digital transformation initiatives. And something that we talk about a lot is this concept of a single window for a bank where a consumer can come into a bank and look at home equity offers alongside mortgage offers and have that single digital experience from the point of just looking at offers all the way through the transaction. And this is something that the TD has been a huge proponent of from day one, and it's alignment at the executive level that helps us drive that sort of conviction into execution. They've got a great recipe for being able to prioritize this sort of transformation across the different teams in the organization. It's not just the digital team, but it's also regulatory compliance, it's information security, it's the business, obviously, and technology, all of them buying into that North Star for their own organization and us aligning with them on it.
Their recipe equals the part of your recipe, and I think that's fantastic. And the reason I brought up part of my back history in online banking and mortgages because there is that unique relationship of empathy because you're engaging with a consumer at a different level than just looking for a mortgage. Yeah, so I think that's great that you have that other view. Now, talking about like the future of mortgage lending, you brought up home equity. It's interesting. Somebody asked me the other day, hey, when rates are so low and all these refinances are over, is it only going to be a purchase market? My answer to them is, hey, I'm not a forecaster. I don't know. But I can tell you that I think home equity is going to be a big deal again. And I think the last couple of years, everybody's been counting or trying to bank on home equity. You've obviously gone down that path with home equity. What are some of your thoughts there?
To hit on the home equity piece quickly, it has been interesting to see the just the home equity activity on our platform. And actually, May, we did our highest month ever in terms of volume, and it's obviously been going through the roof. And the majority of it was actually purchase origination. So we're seeing that come back. But then also on top of that, we're seeing this phenomenon of nesting in the United States in light of the pandemic, obviously. And people are spending more time at home. People who had previously been out and their attention drawn to what's outside of their home and how staring at their walls, looking at opportunities to renovate. And so I think that's going to be reflected as well in how people are taking money out of their homes, either through a cash out refi or home equity line of credit or home equity loan, to invest back into the home, because people are drawing more meaning from their homes today than they were at the beginning of the year. We're bullish on that as well. And so it actually figures into the future, as we think about it, of just secured lending as a whole. And the ability for a consumer to be able to have a better understanding of what their borrowing power is with a bank is very important. So today, if you are coming into a bank for a first-time loan, it takes a while for you to really understand that borrowing power. And in actuality, there's this notion of speed to certainty that is hard to achieve in this industry. There's speed to get to something, but you don't have a high level of certainty as to whether that pre-approval letter is actually something that the bank's going to stand by at the end of the day once they see all of your information. So the ability to effectively shed privacy to improve that certainty needs to be built in order for the consumer to even have that option. And there is a healthy swath of consumers that will definitely opt into driving to certainty at a faster pace once that sort of experience is available. And so that's definitely one of the concepts that we're executing on this year, as we're enabling the piping to be able to allow for real-time decisioning and real-time fully automated approvals that are run through automated underwriting system. When you have that sort of piping, then you can start to create different types of user journeys and user experiences. Being able to plug into multiple decision engines allows you to be able to take a single credit application and then effectively run it across an entire bank. The different lines of businesses that have been historically siloed, and allowing a consumer to see very quickly what their borrowing power is across those different lines of businesses, which today is impossible to predict.
One of the things you brought up in the future of lending is you're an innovator. You are one of the leading innovators and thought leaders in innovation in our industry. I want to talk about it from this angle. One of the brand promises you make is reinvent lending. I want to get some insights to your vision, what that looks like, and some of the things that we might see in the future, at least get some insights into where you think this is going in the future, lending from a technology standpoint.
Sure. So I'll talk about it in two respects, hitting on the concept of the single window in more detail. So reinventing lending means moving the whole lending experience closer to the consumer. They're moving from being product-centric to being more consumer-centric with their capabilities. And it's driving effectively a workforce transformation for them. With that in mind, it means as a consumer, if I go to a bank with, let's say, a $50,000 money out need, then I can look at a cash out refi alongside a home equity loan, alongside potentially a personal loan, and being able to engage directly with the bank across those different lines of businesses in order to have a single lending experience where I'm able to get the product that's right for my need, depending on how quickly I need the money, how quickly I'm going to pay it back, how I feel about the monthly payment or the interest rate or whether I have assets to bring to bear. And this is an experience that, simply put, doesn't exist today because of the way banks are organized and the way their marketing budgets are deployed and their technology budgets are deployed, et cetera. Being able to provide the consumer that consumer-centric experience is something that we feel very strongly about. The second way I answer the question is in the context of home lending itself. And so we just set about building a solution that we would want to use as consumers for the next time we go through a home purchase. And we're still not there by any stretch of the imagination. But the simple notion is that as a consumer, I should be able to do everything in one place. I should be able to submit a purchase offer and be able to basically link my mortgage bank to that experience and have the information in that purchase contract drive the purchase origination process, because ultimately it does, and then be able to manage the closing in that space. We're getting there, but it needs to accelerate. For that to happen, again, it requires a lot more piping. When you're working with really large banks, as we are, a number of some of the largest global banks, you're held to a standard around information security and third-party risk and governance risk and compliance that is very painful at the outset, but it gives you as well the ability to think about just basically taking that same blueprint and extending it for the industry, because that level of confidence that's required by all these different parties to share the sort of information to drive the process for the consumer is very high. And so we believe that we're well positioned just because of that to be able to drive that roadmap with the industry.
When you look at the future of mortgage lending and how there's greater connectivity, you're driving a lot of that, you see that there are some breaks in that process. What's the time frame for those to get fixed? Or a consumer can go online, take that online application, and then basically hit the submit button, and then for all practical purposes, they're accessing all the databases. They're done. What's your thoughts on that?
I totally agree with that. And I think that's where, as an industry, where we are, where, to be very blunt about it, there's been proliferation of companies coming to market with very similar capabilities for that upper funnel, if you want, digital experience. But then one of our colleagues applied for a loan with this couple of banks that work with one of our peers, I'll call them. They submitted the applications through this experience, and it was great, maybe 20, 40 minutes or something. And then after that, everything was done via email. And so the hard part is still that post-application collaboration experience, which is where we've been focusing. It is complex because to be able to do that for every single type of loan, every single type of consumer, every single type of lender, whether you're in the field or at a bank or in a call center, and being able to handle the different workflows is hard. It's complex. You have to do that in order to be able to drive that full post-application experience. And so that's where we are with our customers, is taking the consumer either from the beginning, where they're expressing intent to enter into a lending experience, one of our lead forms, through an application into the fulfillment experience, where they're in the same digital experience as the loan officer and the team members, going through receiving their loan estimate, their initial disclosures, all the way to the point where they're receiving their final closing disclosures, and through it all, having real-time visibility into the progress of the loan. And it's harder, but our focus over the last couple of years has been building that capability to scale with our largest paying customers. And now that we're there, we know it's highly differentiated.
Yeah, I refinanced my mortgage at the end of late in Q4 of 2019, somewhere around December, I think it was what it was. It was a much better experience than I anticipated. And then I've been in the industry for 47 years. So I refinanced and bought a lot over the years. It was a substantially different experience. And I think you bring up a great point. The thing that was so frustrating to me is started out great, got my conditional approval, and we moved through it. But then everything went back to the old way. And I just want to encourage anyone listening to this podcast that's doing anything in the area of innovation, keep everybody in the same portal having the same experience from beginning to end. As you look at this, we wrap this up, I want to get your thoughts on the forbearance window, kind of just generally what's going on out there, the feds. You have had some great comments I've seen published out there, and I want to share some of those with our listeners.
Sure. Regarding forbearance, so I think obviously we're going to see some of these windows start to close soon. Who has requested forbearance, and of those that have requested forbearance, whether they need it. And I think what we've all learned is that there are a number of people who, when the issuance came out, they requested forbearance without actually really needing that forbearance and not understand the implication to their ability to obtain credit. And so a number of people have pulled back on it. Our customers are actually relatively bullish about the prospect of, once that forbearance window expires, not having to enter into loan modification discussions with a significant percentage of those customers. I think the shoe is still yet to drop on this. And a lot of this is tying to the economic outlook, obviously. There's one, the current unemployment numbers, but there's two, the ability for companies to start hiring again so that those people whose jobs have been displaced are in a position to find new jobs. And so a lot of the work that's being done in Washington is very much informing what's going to happen once the forbearance window closes. And that's what I think we're all watching. I mean, there's an interesting insight that I saw recently about just who's impacted by the unemployment numbers. If you look at the working population in the country, roughly 140 million people, we've seen that there's been a huge impact. I think most recently, something like up to 40 million people that have been unemployed. The preponderance of the people that have been unemployed have been people who do not have college degrees, and people either who have a high school degree, never went to college, or people who went to college but never actually graduated. Those people are, as a percentage of home buyers, a significantly lower percentage than people with college degrees. So 70% of the people with college degrees have owned homes, whereas 47% of the people with high school degrees without college degrees own homes. You see there that who's acutely impacted by the unemployment that's arisen during the pandemic disruption, what the exposure is then to that population and to the industry. And so it's super important that the regulation that's coming out of Washington, D.C. is really solving for that problem for the working class. And that's so critical for so many reasons, obviously, for what we're seeing in the country with respect to social unrest and civil unrest and a lot of other pieces. But this is another facet of it, which is very important for us all to understand and watch.
Yeah, this has been very good. Any thoughts about the Federal Reserve and their impact on the markets? What's your thoughts there?
I think their commitment to just do whatever it takes is an important signal to the market. The concept of capping rate increases, that's the sort of edict that the country hasn't seen for some time. And so at this point, there's a lot of speculation as the impact on the psychology of just the money markets with that edict. But clearly, they are going to really focus on just doing what it takes. But we're also very clearly entering into a period of extended just deflation. That is going to have long-term consequences for the country as well, that I think it's the lesser of the two evils at this point that we're trying to grapple with. And I think everyone will knock wood that just the result of that, which oftentimes is inflated assets, asset classes, and even stronger gaps of equality and just wealth between the one end of the spectrum and the other end of the spectrum and everything that causes that is something that we're absolutely going to have to watch as a result of this. So it's not easy to be the Fed at any given time, but during this period, they've got a very big burden.
Yeah, Chairman Powell and company have got some real challenges in front of them. Deflation. It's one of the things I've always been a little worried about, especially when we have the debt on us.
So these are additional questions I wanted to ask. The first one, we've had a lot of serious conversation. Let me throw a funny one at you. If you had $1 million budget, how would you spend it and why?
That's a good question.
Right now, if you asked me at the beginning of the year, maybe in February, I would have told you to just accelerate our build out of our AI capabilities, which are coming forward. Because we see that as just an acute need for the industry, and it just really aligned with a better consumer experience. Post-pandemic, I would definitely say accelerating the build-out of the e-closing ecosystem, as opposed to just for our own service. And that's largely driving towards this defragmentation of a highly fragmented space in order to get it available at scale to consumers and banks and the ecosystem at large.
Yeah. So I'm going to put a twist on the question for you now. You walk out of your office door and you find a lottery ticket that ends up winning $10 million. What do you do?
So first off, I tell my wife I'm not going to use it for us and see how that goes.
Right.
And then put it back into the business. And yeah, I think the industry requires is just better plumbing as a whole. Right now, we have some legacy players who I like to call it, if I use a telecom analogy, you used to have fiber lines running between different points of presence around the country, but ultimately the whole experience was throttled because of the copper line, the plain old telephone service that was going from that central office into people's homes. And it took ages to overhaul it, literally decades. And so we have that today. We have legacy institutions and providers out there that are using flat file databases to drive a significant portion of this industry. We have technologies that were built in the 1980s, and it slows things down. We need to make that overhaul happen by demanding more from our partners, and they need to demand more from us as well. Really accelerate the interconnectivity of the ecosystem. So that $10 million goes to the industry to make that happen.
Yeah, I like that.
Thank you. Thanks so much, David. I appreciate your support.
You rock, dude. You really are good. I appreciate you so much. Alan, anything else?
Yeah, I actually would go with something really short, just for a quick second. And it's only because we're doing a bunch of talk about adoption. And Rajesh, what would you tell our lenders that are listening, your customers and your potential customers, on what it really takes to adopt and truly leverage technology like Roostify? Is there a secret formula or a special way that you approach that?
That's a great question. I don't know if it's a secret formula, but it takes a lot of alignment at the executive level to an outcome. It's not just technology you're throwing over the fence. And the outcome cannot be, this is an accommodation for loan officers that are asking for this. If that's the goal, then you're always going to be dissatisfied. The preferred outcome that we look for in successful relationships is alignment on a bigger picture vision where you're moving the whole workflow to digital. And that's important because having that alignment at the executive level sets the tone for the company. It requires conviction to partner to drive that. And so in order to drive adoption, you have to really incentivize people to adopt the capabilities. And incentives isn't money, it's outcomes. Delivering a better experience for the loan officer, for their team that works behind them, and ultimately for the consumer. And so it takes in turn real collaboration between us and our partner, the customer, the bank, to make that happen. Identifying what gaps are as you go from that 20% adoption to 50% adoption to 75% to 100%. And what needs to be built out or configured differently to support it, what communications need to be rolled out to support it. This is not just turning on a capability. We would love to think that this is just a simple SaaS thing where you just turn on a solution and then everyone flocks to it. But we all know that mortgage itself is super idiosyncratic, highly complex, and then to top it off, every single bank does everything differently. And so it takes a deep understanding on our part and then in turn on the customer's part, that conviction to really work through to achieve those outcomes.
Yeah, that's a great response. That was a great question. Thank you so much. It's so good to have you here. Appreciate you so much being a part of the podcast and love to have you back, especially as you see some things developing. Let's make arrangements to get you back on, and great thoughts today. I appreciate you being here.
Thank you.
Folks, we've had as our guest, again, president of Roostify, Rajesh Bhatt, and he's CEO, co-founder of Roostify, responsible for establishing and executing the vision at Roostify. Encourage you to check out their website. Appreciate them and all that they do. I love the innovation that comes from Rajesh and his team. Next week, we've got Gwen Muse Evans going to be on talking about leadership. Such a timely topic. She's a leader in the industry. She has a company by the name of GME Enterprises. Very excited to have her on. Be sure to check out the write-up on our website at Lickin' on Lending for more information. Also, a special thank you goes out to our sponsors, Finastra, as well as Community Mortgage Lenders of America, Indicom, Incelerate. Remember to register for Incelerate's July 7th webinar that's coming up, as well as Ainsworth Advisors, Mobility RE, and Modex, and so many more. Appreciate you so much. Check out all our sponsors at our website, Lickin' on Lending, under the sponsorship page. Have a great one. Talk to you soon. Thank you so much. Have a great week.
You've been listening to Lickin' on Lending, a weekly mortgage market update with your host, David Lickin of Transformational Mortgage Solutions. Join us next week and